Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the ring. Actually, this is Back to the Ring a second time, but we weren't recording for the first 10 minutes or so. So
Right.
here we are. I, of course, am the one, the only Dr. Bob. That's Dr. B.O.B. here with the Blowout Man. How are you today, Blowout Man?
It's blowout time, Warriors. What's up? I'm so fired up today. I'm so fired up. Thank you so much for this opportunity, Dr. Bob. God bless you and your Ohana. I hope you and your family are doing well.
Thank you, and the same to you. The same to you, Blowout Man. And let's go ahead and give our shout outs. We want to give a big shout out to the crew of Putting You Over, both Standing Streamer and Vanessa. D-Rod, who is no longer active on the show, but is still a listener of the show. Bama Dave, who's I will be appearing on one of his podcasts very soon for the next NXT pay-per-view. And everyone else,
And
everyone who's
also the Kai Tai show. I wanted to send a special shout out to him. I told him I was going to shout him out last week,
Oh yeah.
and
Yep, Kai Tai.
I couldn't do any of this work without my awesome stepson Brett and my beautiful wife Jessica. Thank you guys so much. I love you so much. Let's do this.
Thank you to the Blowout Man and his family, the Blowout family.
You.
But all right, well yeah, so this week we're doing NXT UK and going back to Starrcade 88, which was a really good show. If you're ready, I'm going to go ahead and just jump in again.
Right on, I'm ready. Listen up.
Okay, sorry. This is NXT UK from July 15th, 2021. Starts out with Triple H building up the match that won't happen, the Walter and Dragunov match. He still does a great build-up promo, as Triple H pretty much always does. Then we get the Walter Dragunov 2 press conference. Not a lot to take away from this. It was a pretty, average press conference. One of them, I can't remember which at the moment, said you can expect brutality, which I am sure to expect. I hope we see it. It was a good piece of business. I really like this kind of standoff. I didn't mention this the first time. I really like it when Walter and Dragunov starts speaking Russian or German or whatever it is that language, because I can't tell. I don't know Russian or German, but they start talking in a foreign in their language to each other, and they're just berating each other. And I don't know. It gives me that feeling like that these guys really don't like each other. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. They have that that chemistry when it starts to flow. You know, it's like we'll all get you, and then I'll get you, and then next thing you know is we got ourselves a barrage.
So it was a good piece of business, if you don't mind my saying so.
Thank you.
So we get that, and then we go to a Subculture promo. Of course, they've got a big tag match on the episode that just aired yesterday, as of our recording time. So we'll be doing that next week, and we'll talk about all that later on in the show. Then we go into Smith. Ashton Smith and Oliver Carter versus Teoman and Rohan Raja. This was a match I wasn't particularly excited for or looking forward to, but it ended up being really good. They got a hot start. Smith and Teoman were really good in the beginning. Then they both tag out, and Raja finally gets up on Carter. They get good heat, especially Teoman. I love how brutal he is when he's attacking someone, and how well he lays in his strikes, which is something you mentioned.
I did. I was mentioning that on the first recording here. We said that they just really laid into each other really good. I like their stiff punches. They got some nice body slams, and they really wrenched back on their on their arm bars and stuff. It was pretty cool. It's a lot of high impact action.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely high impact, some good power moves. And yes, like you said, they were working the arm, which is fantastic because Teoman has that great cross face as his finisher.
Cool.
He went for that. He went for that, and then they kind of went back and forth a little bit. Carter got a really good comeback towards the end, but in the end, Teoman cheated while the ref was distracted and ends up getting the win. So the heels cheat to win, which is always a positive. In my book, I think heels are supposed to cheat to win, And it was a good tag match, and Smith and Carter looked better than I think I've ever seen them. I was super impressed. I think they did a good job. Anything else to add?
Something really sweet to say that my wife Jessica was telling me when we were watching this this episode of NXT UK. She says she really loves the detail of the show. It's got a lot of detail when you watch the show. There's a lot of nice stuff to watch. It's always got good animation on the corners. Mm-hmm. It's got a great set, you know, and the colors real vibrant. She says she really liked the detail of it. I do too. I love the detail of the show, and I like their setup. And I can't wait to see this show starting with live crowds coming soon.
Oh, the live crowds are just fantastic. Now, like, it's NXT UK is good on its own because it is a very kind of sport-based, serious wrestling program. But when the crowds are there, it's just absolute pandemonium. It's complete insanity because the UK crowds bring so much energy and are so into it. And they really do, like, and they do a great job. They cheer for the baby faces, and they boo and chant about the heels and how awful the heels are. It's just, it reminds me of what I thought a wrestling crowd should be when I was, like, 10 or 12. You know what I mean? When I was watching the Carolinas and those territories, and people were just constantly yelling at the heels and talking trash to them and stuff like that. It's a good time.
When I was younger, I went to the Los Angeles Coliseum and saw the WWF wrestlers wrestle. Uh-huh. And with the Ultimate Warrior was there, Barbarian was there, Macho Man, all the old school wrestlers were there. I saw them so young. And before the match even started, I think it was Howard Finkel came out, and he tells the crowd, "I want you all to boo as loud as you can or cheer as loud as you can. Because you are here, and this is happening, and this is WWF." We were just cheering like crazy.
Oh, I love Finkel. Finkel was one of the greats. But getting back to NXT UK, we got A-Kid, who's in the back with Sid Scala, and he tells him that as soon as he's healed up and ready to perform again, or ready to wrestle again, he wants Jordan Devlin in a 30-minute Iron Man match. I'm really excited about that because I like Jordan Devlin a lot. I like A-Kid a lot. Their first match was really good. And I think their next match could be even better, especially with the Iron Man. It could come down to like a one pinfall at the very end of the match. They're that close as far as that close on the card and that close in ability. I think that it's a really even match, and either one of them could end up winning.
It's going to be a match of nutrition.
Yeah, it will be. It will be definitely be. It'll be the immovable object versus the unstoppable force, as Gorilla Monsoon used to say.
It's going to be bananas.
Everyone's going to go banana. Then we got a Eva Valkyrie promo, which was a pre-tape promo, but it was still pretty good for her. So maybe she's getting a little bit better at that. Then Pretty Deadly delivered a promo. And like I was saying, I really want them to have a manager. If they had somebody that could like really, really talk for them and really like, because they're already kind of smarmy, like we think we're better than everybody else heels. But if they had somebody that could really just really talk and was a real wordsmith and could get that across and really tear down their opponents and make people really hate them, they would be so good. Cause they're already that good in the ring, you know?
I understand. I don't know who would be a good manager to pick for them right now. Cause I'm still kind of new to the NXT UK, but yeah, when they get somebody that's got some history behind them and somebody that's got like maybe a cane or something, mm-hmm. There we go.
Oh yeah, somebody with a gimmick would definitely be good. I think Jenny, the fashionista, would be a great person to be their valet / manager because she's already has that kind of because we'll get we'll see her this next episode, but she's already got that kind of better than you mentality, and she speaks really well and kind of looks down her nose at everybody. And I think that's kind of what they need. So we'll see, But
right.
So we come out of that. We go right into the women's title match. Mako Satomura, the champion, versus Amel, the challenger.
Right.
This was, I mean, this, like I said, Amel doesn't really have too much of a chance here as far as I'm concerned, but they start off with a lockup. Mako gets in some good grappling, and Amel uses the hair, which is cheating, to get an advantage. She has a brutal attack in the corner. I can't remember what it was. I think it might be like it was a drop kick or like a knee strike or something, but it looked really good, really stiff. It looked stiff. I'm not saying it was. I'm saying it looked that way. You know what
right.
I mean.
Yeah, it was devastating.
Yes. Mako did a good job selling down to Amel, which means she sold, but she didn't sell enough for anybody to really think she was in that much trouble. But though Amel does end up getting a really close two count, but Mako immediately starts taking back over and gets the win. It wasn't a bad match. It was pretty good. Mako, my only real problem with it is Mako's finisher kind of requires a little too much cooperation and a little bit too much setup. If she could get it off a little bit faster when it actually looks like the person is just kind of naturally getting up instead of just kneeling, waiting to take it, I think it would be much better.
Yeah, you might start to get the crowd doing that. Oh, right, well, before she hits.
See, I mean, and there's some things like the Claymore, where the person has to be standing up to be hit with it, where that kind of makes sense because you got to wait for the person to get up to be able to hit it. But as hers, it she hits it while the person is on one knee, so it's got to it almost has to come out of nowhere. It almost has to be more like an RKO with very
right.
little setup. You know what I mean? Where it would look better, the less setup it has, the better it would look. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see if, I mean, she might even go to a different finisher. I don't know.
I did the research you were telling me to go look at, the old match with Mako Satomura. I think it was.
And Kaylee Ray.
Kaylee Ray. Yeah. I looked at the old match. It was cool. They have a different intro for Mako Satomura to tell you her attitude for the match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was, both of those, because they did two matches. I think they did two matches. Yeah, they did two matches because the first one, Kaylee won, and then the second one, Mako won. But yeah, both matches are really good. And I like they did a good package with that, especially with Satomura, because that was only her first or second match in the, in NXT UK. So I like it when they give a little bit of a backstory or just kind of get you a little pumped for that particular wrestler as opposed to, oh, well, just here they are, you know?
Right. Just like the Fall Guys, they used to just say their name.
Oh yeah. 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 This is, Joseph,
the Blowout Man versus the Fiend.
Blowout Man from, you know, where and who knows when. So we got, then they go to a break. We come back. They announce that Walter has been injured with a serious hand injury. Now, breaking news. Well, this isn't really breaking news. They've announced that the Walter Dragunov title match is actually going to be at NXT TakeOver 36, which is going to be the weekend of SummerSlam. I don't think that there was really an injury here. I think that they wanted this match in front of crowds. I think they thought they were going to get crowds back in the UK by now, so that's why they announced it. And then they ended up pushing it back so they could have it in the U.S. so it could be in front of people. That's my guess. I don't know one way or the other, but that would just be – that makes more sense than Walter just got his hand injured because he's a pretty careful dude about stuff like that.
I know, right? And they were just about ready to have the match too. And I don't know. You're right. I think that they probably figured they'll just do the show in front of fans. And it was breaking news. Warriors, Walter Dragunov is going to be postponed because of a hand injury. So I was like,
Right. We'll see. And, you know, we'll also see if the hand injury plays into the match because they would be smart to do that, because if Walter has a injured hand he's recovering from, that makes
right.
that has him going in weakened, which would be able to give Dragunov an in to beat Walter, but still make Walter look really, really strong. You see what I'm saying? Because he could be like, well, I had an injury. Like, I can't make any excuses, but I had an injury, you know?
Right. I'm pretty sure they'll probably mention it. I'm pretty sure they'll probably say something about it.
You think they'll mm-hmm. probably mention it like 20 times in the match. They'll mention it so much that we'll get tired of them mentioning it. So then we get Jenny with Joseph Connors are going to be on Supernova Sessions next week. I'm excited about it. Supernova Sessions is a little, it's a little cheesy. It's kind of like if Miz TV, yeah, it's very much like Miz TV. Only Noam Dar doesn't have quite the same type of charisma that the Miz does, if that makes any sense. He's still annoying and kind of a twerp, but in a much different way, in a very European way, I guess.
Wow, that's gonna be pretty cool. So I like Supernova.
So it's gonna that'll be interesting. Then we get the big main event, the big title match: Mark Coffey with Wolfgang in his corner versus Tyler Bate with Trent Seven in his quarter, and this is for the Heritage Cup championship, and it is a Heritage Cup match, which means it's a six 3-minute rounds. You can win, the goal is to win the first person to win two rounds, is the winner. To win a round, you can either win by pinfall or submission. If someone gets disqualified at any point in the match automatically, they automatically lose the entire match, not just the round. So, Wow. Yeah, which they didn't mention this time, but probably because it was more of a friendly. But yeah, if you get disqualified or if you knock your opponent out, then you automatically win that round.
Okay.
So, or you automatically win. I think if you knock them out, you might automatically win the match, but I'm not entirely sure. That might just be a round thing. But I know if you get disqualified, you lose the match completely. So it's very, very, very straight up rules wrestling. For round one, starts course 0-0. That's more of a feeling out than anything else. But there was some really good catch wrestling, some really good back and forth chain wrestling in that round, which I haven't seen Mark Coffey do a lot of. That's a lot of what Tyler Bate does, but Mark Coffey held his own. But there's no falls. Go into round two, and Tyler Bate ends up getting the first fall on what was a great, great catch-as-catch-can sequence.
His small package he got him in was freaking great.
It was a tight small package. Like, it was believable that Mark Coffey couldn't get out of that.
No, I seen his face afterwards. It was 1, 2, 3. I was like, yep. Come on, it's over.
So they go. Tyler Bate wins the second round. So it starts round three is 0-1. Coffey, now this is where Coffey starts really using his power and where they really start striking each other. This is kind of the, okay, well, we need to get down to business. Plus Coffey's down one. So he needs to get that win, get that, that pin back, which he does end up getting a pin on a nice, rolling lariat, or not lariat, but like that elbow that he throws, right?
I had that later on during the match. He gives him a stiff Coffey forearm to the jaw.
That's right. That's right.
Blowouts on top of it.
You got it, blowout. So Coffey ends up winning that round. So we come into the fourth round, 1-1. Bate starts using his quickness. We get a lot more two counts in this one. Bate, but it ends with Bate doing the airplane spring, which I have no idea how he does the airplane spin with guys that size up on his shoulders. Like, it amazes me.
I have written down Bob Backlund, Hulk Hogan helicopter spin.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, I don't understand how he doesn't blow his knees out doing that, because that's the first thing I think about is just lifting one foot up and the other, and just the stress it would put on your knees with somebody that heavy on you. Like Tyler Bate is a beast. They call
He's a
him,
beast.
they call him, they don't call him the big strong boy for nothing, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
So then we go into round five, and Bate ends up winning with the Tyler driver. That round actually was over a little quicker than I thought it was going to be. But so Bate wins, and it was a fun match. I thought that was a really well put together, good rounds match. It's actually was a really good one for you to step in as your first rounds match because you kind of see the ebb and flow of what that kind of match looks like.
It was, and I really, it's like the wrestling gods have just put the timing perfectly for me to be able to witness Mark Coffey. That was awesome. What was it called? The coffee driver at the end?
Yes. No, the
Oh,
Tyler driver. Yeah,
the
the
Tyler
Tyler
driver.
driver. Yeah, he
Hey.
that's it, it's insane. Like I said, he is insanely powerful for a guy his size. I mean, it's not that he's like a tiny dude or anything, but like he's not super. You wouldn't think, you know what would be a great match is Tyler Bate versus Cesaro, 'cause they're both
It would.
deceptively strong. Like they would throw each other around the ring. And it would probably look just fantastic.
We're talking about a crossbody off the top rope rolling into a power slam.
So it just ridiculous. So that was NXT UK. I'm looking forward to this next episode. I was actually thinking next week we just do Friday again. Maybe.
Right.
And then
That
do
sounds great.
and then instead of doing a pay-per-view, we just double up and do a two NXT UK episode. That way we can actually get caught up to what's going on.
Okay. That sounds perfect.
Does that make sense? So then
That makes sense. I think Biff Tannen is probably going to take the week off and maybe not go back in time this week.
That's all right. He's got plenty to go back in time too. So
Okay.
Speaking of going back in time, as we hop in the TARDIS and set the coordinates and go back to Norfolk, Virginia at the Scope Coliseum for Starrcade 1988, we have Tony Schiavone and Magnum TA up in the booth introducing and running a little bit of intermatch commentary with Jim Ross and Bob Caudle at ringside. A little bit of backstory here. I remember watching this pay-per-view live. I was 8 years old at the time in South Carolina. Because I remember a couple of these matches, especially the Bam Bam Bigelow Barry Windham match. But
Yes.
so this was a nice little trip back in time for me because all of these 80s Starrcades, I remember most of them. We'll get right into it. The first match is the Fantastics, Bobby Fulton and Tommy Rogers, who are the champions, versus the Game Master, Kevin Sullivan, and Dr. Death, Steve Williams, for the United States tag titles. First thing anybody who's watched WWE in the past 30 years will notice is that Teddy Long is the ref.
Right.
He is the referee for the majority of the matches. I think the first half of this card, maybe even the first two-thirds of the card, is Teddy Long is the ref, and then it switches over to Tommy Young, who was the head ref of the NWA at the time. This match has a pretty quick pace, a lot of good tags at the very beginning. The heels maintain control. Neither babyface is able to make a comeback. Kevin Sullivan is a great heel. His facials, the way he works his opponents, the way he expresses his brutality really comes across as a heel persona in the ring. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, he punches you when the ref's not looking. He rakes the face. And then later on in his career, he becomes the games master that turns Hulk Hogan to his dark side.
Yeah, Kevin Sullivan is a great heel. not the best. I don't think he's the greatest in the ring, but he was definitely, especially here, he was good. They isolate Buddy Rogers for a while, get some really good heat on him. Rogers gets a false hope spot, but Sullivan cuts off the tag. There's a double knockdown and a hot tag and a really good comeback. But the finish was really good. I like the finish, how the chaos in the ring led to Dr. Death getting that cheap rope spot, you know, where he drops the guy neck first onto the rope and then ends up getting the tag or ends up getting the pin. And new U.S. tag champions. Did you think of the match?
I like that the tempo of the audience, they don't do all the stuff that we're used to hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't hear like the flare woos after a chop.
Yeah.
You don't, it's like, it's pretty cool to be able to watch it in the old time way. I liked Kevin Sullivan. I gravitated towards watching Kevin Sullivan because I knew right away, oh, he's the games master and he's the reason why Hulk Hogan goes dark side later on.
Yep.
That's why. This is a different era for me. And yeah. I was so excited that you were able to go there and actually watch this live. This is crazy.
I wasn't at the Starrcade. We got it on pay-per-view. We ordered the pay-per-view. We didn't. One of our friends, one of my stepfather's friends, ordered it, and a bunch of people went over to his house to watch it. Because that's usually the way it was with pay-per-views. I remember we used to do that even in like 2003. There were a group of four households, and one household would rent a different pay-per-view, and we'd cycle through them, and then everybody would go to that house and watch the pay-per-view. That was a good match. Then we go up to Tony and Magnum TA, and they kind of go over the card and give their predictions. And then we go back down to the ring, and now, oh, by the way, I gave that first match a B. I thought that was a pretty good grade. It was a good match. It wasn't a classic match, but it was still good. Next we go to the Battle of the Midnight Expresses. Dennis Condrey and Randy Rhodes, also calling themselves the original Midnight Express, with Paul E. Dangerously as their manager, who you'll know as Paul Heyman, obviously.
Right.
Against Bobby Eaton and Sweet Stan Lane, with Jim Cornette, who are the babyfaces in this one. This is the only time the Midnight Express was ever babyfaces, was during this run. And I think they had a run with Arn and Tully where they weren't really the babyfaces, but Arn and Tully were part of the Horsemen, so people were cheering for the Midnight anyway. Cornette starts off with, I'm sorry, do you want to say something?
I'll go ahead and let you continue on with the action. I'm gonna interject with every time Jim Cornette whacks the guy with his racket.
So we start out, and Cornette, of course, is taunting Paul, trying to get him into the ring. We get a little bit of a jump start with Bobby and Stan on Randy Rhodes, and then Dennis. Dennis gets hit with the racket on the outside. And I wrote Cornette kind of at the beginning of this, I was a little like, because Cornette was kind of taking over the match at certain points, especially in the very beginning when the action wasn't really going as fast as, you know, jumping up on the apron, taunting Paulie Dangerously. Like, I get it, you know, he's always been kind of obnoxious, but for the most part, I was kind of like, okay, Jim, like, you know, let the boys work, you know, let the guys in the match do the work. The match was kind of pretty much, to me, it was a stalemate till around 5 minutes in the match. Bobby Eaton starts taking over. Bobby has a great flying elbow. I don't know if I've ever even seen Bobby's flying elbow more than once or twice, because it's more of a babyface move. But it was fantastic. The Bobby and Stan get up. But then Bobby does that mistake where he goes for the knees in the corner and ends up racking himself on the turnbuckle. And Dennis and Randy immediately take over. Bobby starts selling his ass off, which was fantastic, because you don't see, again, Bobby Eaton really selling as a babyface for a prolonged period of time. Then there's a good false hope spot. But Condrey ends up coming, getting up on him and getting great heat. Dennis Condrey, that's one of the best things about Condrey that I like more than Stan Lane, is he was always, Condrey looks like one of those guys you just don't like, if that makes any sense. Like, he looks like, he just looks like a mean, nasty, like, spit in your eye dude.
Dang.
Which is great for a heel, you know. Not so good for babyface all the time, but great for a heel.
I have it written down right here, Dennis Condrey. I'm going to go ahead and look him up right now after we're done with the show.
Yeah, he was part of the Midnight Express in the 86 run with Jim Cornette in the Crockett Promotions. The original Midnight Express go for the rocket launcher, which is the move where one of the guys stands up on the turnbuckle and the other guy like lifts him up and helps him get off and launches him across the ring. But they miss it, which leads to the hot tag to Stan Lane, who has a great comeback. And one of the things you'll notice in these tag matches, especially this one, the first one was pretty good about it. The one later on with Dusty and Sting was good, is when a babyface comes in and they're making the comeback, the heels feed them, meaning that all the babyface really has to do is just kind of stand in the middle of the ring and turn around, and he just punches people or kicks people or knocks people over. He doesn't have to do much work to get to the heels because the heels keep coming to him. Does that
right.
make sense?
And then they just keep falling back down after he hits him with one punch, Stone Cold Steve Austin style. He clears the ring.
Yeah. So there's a great comeback, but the ref ends up going down. Stan gets the pin, but Paul E. Dangerously comes in while the ref's down and hits him in the head with the phone and puts Randy Rhodes on top of him. But then Jim Cornette comes in and just punches Paul E. right out of the ring. It was fantastic. Seeing Jim Cornette punch Paul Heyman was just worth the whole price of admission for this one. But then Teddy, the referee, finds the phone, and he's holding the phone up. And Bobby and Stan do the – I forget what they called it. They call it the double deuce. I know it as the high-low. The one where Stan goes low and Bobby goes high, and they end up flipping the guy on his back. And Bobby and Stan end up getting the win. But Paul and Randy and Dennis end up getting heat on the baby faces on Stan and Jim until Bobby comes in with the racket and makes the save. So I thought that was – I gave it a B. I thought that was a really good match. There were parts of it I was like, really? Like, especially just Cornette getting up on the apron every like 2 seconds in the beginning. I was like, It was a little much.
I liked it. I like Jim Cornette a lot. I think he does a lot of good selling, and it reminds me a lot of my own character. I'm really excited all the time too. And it's kind of like, you know,
yeah,
I always go over and beyond too. So I like Jim Cornette getting up there on the apron and really giving it to Paul E. Dangerously. That was awesome.
But overall, it was a good match. And it's a really good little spot in time, because that's, again, one of those matches. It's very so rare to see the Midnight Express or Jim Cornette as baby faces and see the people actually cheering for them. And actually, like, I don't know if you saw at one point in the match, I think it was Randy Rhodes was down on the ground in front of a fan by the barricade, and the fans like yelling at Cornette, like, come over here, hit him with the racket, come on, he's over here, he's down. Like, it was, and I was just like, man, no, they wouldn't have done that. Like, 2 years ago, they would have never done that, ever, ever, ever. And so it just goes to show you, like, with the right opponent, you can turn a baby or one of the biggest heels into one of the biggest baby faces.
Who ended up becoming the new Midnight Express after all this happened, Bob?
Oh,
Dr. Bob?
Well, if I remember correctly, Randy Rhodes only had this one match because the booker didn't like Randy Rhodes, so they let him go and brought somebody else in. If I remember correctly, this is, you know, I'm just trying to remember from what Cornette said in the past about that. And then the Midnight actually ended up leaving, I think, like 2 years after that, maybe less. Well, they broke up. Stan Lane and Jim Cornette left because of the booking committee. They weren't getting the way the booking was being run in WCW. And Jim Herd, the guy who was from TBS or TNT, the Turner, people didn't like the Midnight Express and didn't see any money value in them, so he wouldn't book them strong at all, so wouldn't put them into feuds with people. And Cornette just got fed up, and him and Stan left. And the whole idea really was for Cornette was going to go start Smoky Mountain Wrestling, which there's one season on the network now I'm currently watching, which was his own, like, basically territory promotion in Tennessee, I think, or I can't remember. Cool. Yeah. So he was doing that. And then Bobby ended up getting, they paid Bobby Eaton a ton of money to stay with WCW. So he ended up staying. And so they got rid of the Midnight Express, and that's where the Heavenly Bodies came in, which was originally Tom Pritchard and Sweet Stan Lane, and then Stan, I think Stan left, and that's when Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey came in, or the other way around, I can't remember. But, yeah, so, but the Battle of the Midnights actually culminated in a tuxedo match between Paulie Dangerously and Jim Cornette, where the whole purpose of the match was to tear the opponent's tuxedo off and embarrass them. And Jim Cornette ended up winning that. So,
oh, great. Yeah. So Paul E. Dangerously, there's a spot of him on YouTube that he gets his tuxedo ripped off by Jim Cornette.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll have to look that one. That's gonna be great.
But then after that match, they go back up. They go to Magnum TA, who's with Dr. Death and Kevin, or Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Games Master Kevin Sullivan, and Mike Rotunda. Dr. Death and Sullivan talk a little bit about their match, but they're more plugging the Mike Rotunda Rick Steiner match, which is in a little bit. And Rotunda, of course, they're calling Rick Steiner dumb, so on and so forth. And then they so they do that, and then sorry, I'm a little gassy. I'm having a couple of beers here, and it's like, whew.
It's all right. My water is already all gone.
So, yeah. Yeah, and I can't. I don't know if I could put a pause on it, I would. But anyway, so we get the next match is the Junkyard Dog and Ivan Koloff versus the Russian Assassins with Paul Jones. If JYD and Ivan Koloff win by pinfall, then Paul Jones must retire. This wasn't the best match. JYD gets up early. Koloff, of course, is great. I've always loved Ivan Koloff's work, whether a heel or a babyface. He's just a fantastic worker. JYD misses the falling headbutt. They get a little bit of heat on JYD, but then he gets the hot tag to Ivan Koloff, and the ref ends up getting confused about who's supposed to be in the ring and who isn't. And the Russians use a little loaded mask, twin magic, quote unquote.
Yes, I saw that part. Yep, he puts it in his mask, I think, right?
Yep, he puts it in his mask, and then because the referee can't tell the two of them apart because they're both big dudes with masks on.
And he headbutts them.
Yes, and he headbutts them, and the Russians end up winning. So, I gave it a D because it wasn't. There wasn't anything awful about it. It just was not very exciting at all.
I popped for JYD. When I see the Junkyard Dog come out, I was like, yeah!
Right on. I'm going to run. Do you want to fill for a couple seconds for me while I run to the fridge real quick?
Yeah, sure, of course. Let me go ahead and take care of the rest of this part real quick. So, while Dr. Bob heads off with Warriors to go take care of some things, the the unknown superstar of the blowout, man, just really likes to say thank you so much for you guys listening to Apple Podcast and listening to the Putting You Over show and listening to Back to the Ring. We're going to work hard each week to give you guys all of the high impact action and the fast paced action from NXT UK. And I'm here with Ohana Wrestling out here in Hilo, Hawaii, and all the Warriors, Dr. Bob, Vanessa in the chat, the Standing Streamer, Roadshow, everybody at Put You Over. We just like to thank you guys so much, Kai Tai Show, and everybody at the Smack World Podcast and Bama Dave. You guys are family. You guys are Ohana over at Ohana Wrestling. And also, Warriors, get ready, because the same day as SummerSlam, August 21st, 2021, the new movie, The Blowout, How I Became a Professional Wrestler, is going to be dropping. The Standing Streamer is working on editing it right now with The Roadshow. And it's got all kinds of special WWE guests that are going to be in it, including The Prototype, John Cena, Rob Van Dam, Jerry the King Lawler. The time I seen Bob Backlund and The Undertaker ride off at FanFest in 1999. So get ready, Warriors, and try and prepare and try and relax. I know it's going to be difficult to relax when you're watching the blowout man in his new movie, but it's going to be an exciting adventure, and we can't wait for SummerSlam for that to come out.
Produced in parts unknown.
Yeah, produced in parts unknown from the blowout man. He paints his face and his chest.
Right on. That's exciting. It's exciting stuff. Did you hear, just completely off topic, but did you hear about SummerSlam is going to be in theaters this year?
Oh my gosh. Wow, yeah. So they can actually pay to go watch it in a theater?
Yeah, you can pay to go watch it with a bunch of other fans on a big screen in a theater. It's really tempting, because that would be a lot of fun. It would be like being like at one of the old, because I don't know if you remember, but back in the day they used to do closed circuit broadcasts close to the stadium, where people would all gather in a given area, usually like a church or a rec center or something, and they would set up chairs and people would watch the wrestling matches on just the TV. So it would be very similar to that, but I think it would be cool. It's a cool concept. I think if used correctly, definitely on the really big pay-per-views, they could actually get some money from it.
And SummerSlam this year, Warriors, this is going to be awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be good. But enough about that. Everybody else is talking about SummerSlam. Sorry.
I don't know if you heard, but my movie was going to be coming out that day. That's why I was discussing SummerSlam.
Oh, I know. Yeah, I heard. I got back a little bit before, but I didn't want to interrupt you because you were on a bit of a roll there. So I was just like, I'll let him go and I'll interject when I get a chance. But
all right.
Speaking of on a roll, Mike Rotunda was on a roll coming into this match. Ah, see what I did there?
Yes.
He had actually been the television champion for over a year at the point that this match was. Rick Steiner versus Mike Rotunda. Mike Rotunda, obviously the champion. TV title match, so it's only 20 minutes. All the TV title matches were always 20 minutes then. And it's also during this match, Kevin Sullivan is suspended in a steel cage above the ring, so he cannot interfere. They have a nice brawling start. Rotunda keeps rolling to the outside. At the very beginning, it seemed like every time Steiner got up, Rotunda would roll the outside. Though he does get a really good drop toe hold, but Steiner ends up reversing it and then bites Rotunda on the ass or on the butt. I've never liked that. I've always thought that was dumb, but, you know, It's Rick Steiner,
He
so
snapped.
he snapped. He bit his gluteus maximus.
Yeah.
But Rotunda has like a has a great suplex, which was nice. Then the crowd was super hot for this one. Like they were really into seeing Rotunda lose and seeing Rick Steiner go over. Steiner ends up going to the floor for a little bit, but he won't. Steiner just won't back down. He won't stay down. He won't like Rotunda can't get enough heat on him to keep him down. Rotunda uses the ropes for leverage behind the ref's back at one point during a pin. That doesn't, or no, that wasn't during the pin. That was during a reverse chin lock. Steiner gets a little bit of a false hope spot, and I just wrote, this is a great match. Like this, it was back and forth. I couldn't remember who won. Then Steiner starts to get his comeback, and this all kind of happens pretty quick. Steiner starts on his comeback, then Dr. Death comes down to the ringside. They mention the time is starting to run out, that they've been in this match for a while, and all of a sudden the bell rings, but it wasn't the bellkeeper. And there's confusion everywhere. And the Tommy Young, the other referee, comes down, and the referees are arguing. They're talking about it, and it turns out Dr. Death had rung the bell. And after he rang the bell, they lowered the cage, and then Kevin Sullivan ran over and rang the bell. So they decide to restart the match, and within what 10 seconds, Steiner has won the TV championship. I thought it was a great finish, great match, fantastic. I gave it an A, just always around. It was a really cool match. And it's always good to see Mike Rotunda wrestling as Mike Rotunda instead of, everybody knows him as IRS, but I like Mike Rotunda, his style, more than IRS's.
Oh my God, I just totally blanked what I was gonna say right now. I wrote down that it was Mike Rotunda was IRS. Oh my God, that's like shocking me right now. No, what I was gonna tell you, this was what I was gonna say. At the end of the show, I think Jim Ross and
Bob Caudle.
Bob Caudle were talking about the reason why by Steiner was going to win the United States title today, and he said he did it for his mother.
Yep. He did it for his mom.
Right.
Which is funny actually, because there's a I forget which one it was we reviewed, but there's a match when the brief period of time that the Steiners were in the WWF at one of the pay-per-views. I don't it was a SummerSlam or a Survivor Series. And Steiner's mom and sister were actually in the audience, and they interviewed them. So I thought that was funny. They said, I did it for my mom. And then a couple years later, we end up seeing their mom on a WWE pay-per-view.
Yeah, that's kind of like foreshadowing right there.
Yep. So then they go back up to Tony and T and Magnum TA in the booth. They don't really say too much. And then they come back to the next match. Next match is Bam Bam Bigelow with Oliver Humperdinck versus Barry Windham with J.J. Dillon for the United States Championship. Of course, Barry Windham is the champion. Bam Bam Bigelow is the challenger. And this is at this point, Barry Windham was the fourth member of the Horsemen, along with Tully, Arn, and Flair. So that's why J.J. Dillon's with him, of course. They have a nice lockup start. Bam Bam gets powerful right out the gate. One of my favorite moves in this match, and we'll get to Barry when he does his earlier later, but Bam Bam does this like torture rack backbreaker. Did you see that? Almost like the what
Lex
is?
Luger torture rack.
Yeah, he puts him up like he's in a torture rack. And then
And then
he
he drops down to his
drops down to
knees.
his knees, and
And then
it
he busts
just
him. That was the first move he did to what's his name?
Windham.
Windham, yeah.
Yeah.
I seen that.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Nikki Bella's finisher.
Yeah, she can't do that one no more.
Yeah. because of the because of her neck. Well, she can't really do any. I don't think she's ever going to wrestle again,
Right.
to be honest with you. And that's fine. If she doesn't want to, she doesn't have to. I mean, I don't think anybody's crying for the Bellas to make a comeback. Not that I dislike the Bellas. I'm just saying. Bigelow completely no-sells a suplex, and takes over control. Barry, of course, keeps rolling out of the ring every time Bam Bam gets a little bit of momentum. He rolls out of the ring, and then finally, Wyndham throws Bigelow out of the ring, but Bigelow ends up getting back in, taking it to Barry, and then but he pulls up at two. Did you see that? He had Barry down for a three count and pulled him up at two, and then
Oh, why?
went for the big splash and missed it. And I was like, that was your chance right there. Like, you had it.
Yes, he was going to beat a horseman. He almost beat a horseman.
Yep.
Ugh.
He misses the big splash. Barry takes back over. I love that. Well, this was the move that Barry did that I always loved, is his that flying lariat. Because Barry's a 6'6". So he's a tall, lanky dude. And to see him at that size doing a flying lariat, where he just hits the ropes and jumps and does a clothesline on a guy, is just it looks so good, because it's almost like when you see Drew McIntyre do like a drop kick or something. And it's like, whenever a guy that tall does something that super athletic in the air, it looks even better.
Yeah.
But he
Yeah,
does.
you're right. He has a great lariat off the top rope. It's almost like a clothesline from hell from JBL.
And then he puts the claw on, and he gets Bam Bam down in the claw, but he can't. But Bam Bam ends up getting to the ropes. Then he gives him a big slam, and misses the but misses a flying elbow. So Bam Bam starts making a comeback, and then they both go over the top, and Barry beats up Bam Bam enough that he slips back in under the rings, and Bam Bam gets counted out, and Barry Windham wins, which is a great heel sneaky victory, and makes Bam Bam look strong even in defeat, because it's just a count out. He didn't pin him. You didn't pin me in the middle of the ring. You got to count out. Let's go in a steel cage. There's no count outs in a steel cage. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, that was a great match. I'm a big Wyndham guy. When I grew up, I remembered Barry Wyndham's name a
Yeah.
lot, and I tried looking up his Twitter online, and I couldn't find it.
I don't think he's on Twitter. Barry's kind of I wouldn't say a recluse, but Barry likes to keep to himself, and I don't think he does a lot of social media. I got to meet him for like 2 seconds when my wife and I had a photo op with the horseman. We went actually specifically to a Comic-Con in Knoxville, Tennessee, where Glenn
Right.
Jacobs, the town that Glenn Jacobs is the mayor of. Yeah, Arn and Tully and JJ and Rick and Barry Windham, and they were all there. So we were like, we got to go get our pictures taken with the horsemen. Like, that was the whole reason we went, because why
That's
not?
cool. Do you two have your four fingers up when you guys took the picture?
Oh yeah, everybody had their fingers. Everybody had the four horsemen up,
Oh.
and of course everybody had their rings on too, their giant rings. Flair had both of his rings on, one on each hand. The Hall of Fame ring.
Okay, when you said Rick, for some reason it didn't pop into my head right away. I'm like, oh my God, Rick Flair, duh.
So that was funny. That was the second time I got to meet Ric Flair. The first time was at a book signing with him and Charlotte. We they they're it, you know They did that book together. What's it called? Second Nature is the name of the book, and it had just come out. And I bought a ticket, and with the ticket you got the book, and they were both there. And this was like right after Rick had been like really sick in the hospital and shit. I don't know if you
Oh no.
remember that. But yeah, like
Oh,
he.
I can remember praying for him and stuff like that, but yeah. What happened with him?
I can't remember exactly what it was. It was some sort of like infection or something, like food poisoning turned bad, or really bad pneumonia or something. I don't remember exactly what it was, but he was like, he was in a coma. Like, it was very touch and go. They didn't know if he was going to make it at all. And of course, you know, he's Ric Flair, so he fucking did. it was fun. It's always weird. It was weird. Number one, it was weird seeing Charlotte, you know, face to face, you know, and hearing her talk in her regular voice, because you know how she talks in her promos and stuff is not how she actually talks regularly. So I don't know. That was fun. So, but yeah, listeners will also.
I want to hear all the details, and I want to see the picture, hopefully, on Twitter of you guys putting up the four fingers. That'd be great.
Okay, I might put that out there. I might put a big smiley face over my wife. I don't know if she wants to be out on social media like that. But,
I know my wife doesn't like it when I post pictures either. So never mind. I apologize.
No, you're fine. You're fine. But okay. Yeah. So that was that. And then we go to Magnum TA with Rick Steiner. Of course, Rick Steiner is a little confused, but that was kind of his character at the time. I don't think he's actually that dumb, but I think he plays dumb really well. So they did that. Then we go to I gave that match a B, by the way. So it's a B for Bam Bam Bigelow's and Barry Windham's match. A lot of B's there. I gave it a B.
Okay, I got it. So far we're 3.0 right now.
Yeah. So because the only one I gave a D to was the Russians match, because I just really didn't care for that one. So now we go down and we got Dusty and Sting versus the Road Warriors with Paul Ellering. And this is actually, I forgot that this was a tag title match for the World Tag Team Championships. The Road Warriors are the champions, of course. Dusty and Sting are challenging. And this was after a really brutal looking attack on Dusty, where the Road Warriors took one of the spikes off of their shoulder pads that they wear to the ring and dug it into Dusty's eye. Funny story about this is I was going to when we lived in South Carolina, I went to a Christian school, because most of the public schools in South Carolina were really bad.
That's good. So, you're lucky.
So I went to my parents, you know, sent me to a Christian school. And of course, I was in third grade, I think, at the time. And they were doing their prayer list for the weekend or whatever. And of course, I had watched this angle with Dusty and the Road Warriors, and I wanted everybody to pray for Dusty Rhodes.
You wanted everybody to pray for Dusty Rhodes.
And everybody laughed at me, and they were like, "Wrestling's fake. That's fake. It's not real." And I was like, "But they gouged his eye out." So
I know.
That was one of those things where I was like, "Why would you like? Oh my God, that's awful." So like, anytime two people tell me wrestling's fake, I get really fucking pissed off about it, because I'm like, it's not fake. It's scripted.
It's a call to work. It's called a work. It's not fake at all.
It is a working combat sport.
Right.
That's really the best way to put it. Anyway, I just thought that was a funny little thing to interlude. That was how I found out that wrestling was completely fake.
After Dusty Rhodes said, "Make it good."
Mm-hmm. So, make it good, baby. Just don't worry about it. Just stab me right above the eye. Just a little bit right above the eye there, daddy. Yeah, that's the way to do it. Get the blood flowing down my face.
I've dined with kings and I've dined with queens.
And I slept in alleys and dined on pork and beans. All right. So, Dusty and Sting versus the Road Warriors. They had a big jump start before, but then everybody separates. Sting and Dusty, of course, get up early. And I just wrote, young Sting is so exciting. Like, he is just so into it in this match. everything he does, especially when he dives off the top rope onto Animal on the floor. Like, it's just crazy. Like, he's going a million miles an hour and has so much energy and so much excitement, but yet he's working really good. And
I think it says he only had like 7 years experience at this time.
3 years. He had 3 years experience. Yeah. He had, because he broke in with Hellwig, and then right. They separated because creative differences. So we'll just say that.
We know the story. The Warrior couldn't go to one of the shows one day, and Sting had to.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So let's see. And then Animal ends up getting a tag to Hawk, who gets the other upper hand, and they immediately start attacking Dusty's injured eye. Dusty threw a great drop kick, which you do not see very often at all. So, if you saw that, remember that, because a Dusty Rhodes drop kicks are few and far between. the Road Warriors still maintain control and Dusty finally gets the hot tag, to Sting, and Sting makes a great comeback. It ends up getting, I can't remember who it was that he got in the, I think it was Hawk. He got in the Scorpion Deathlock. Maybe, no, it was Animal.
I think it was Animal, and then Hawk comes in and kicks him or something.
Yeah, Hawk comes in and kicks him, which causes a bunch of confusion. But then Sting gets the pin where he does that big crossbody off the top rope to Animal, gets the pin, but Ellering ends up pulling the ref out of the ring to cause a disqualification. So Sting and Dusty win, but the Road Warriors retain. I thought this was a really good match. I gave this one a B+. I was like, this was a really good match.
Classic storytelling. Anytime we got Dusty Rhodes in there, Sting, and then obviously you got the Road Warriors, who are just devastating. There's no stopping these two guys. They don't take punishment. They mm-hmm. don't get hurt. You can yep. hit them as many times as you want. You do the 10 count in the corner, and all they do is laugh at you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, they were legit tough guys. Like, if you've never seen their, I have the Legion of Doom DVD set that I bought. I don't even remember where I bought it. I might have bought it at, like, a thrift store or something. It's like Animal's talking about it, because this was shortly after Hawk had died. But Animal's talking, and he's like, we were bouncers. We got in like legit fist fights every night, before we started wrestling. Like, we were, they were legit. Like, they weren't just bodybuilders. They were legit tough dudes who could literally, if they didn't want to do something, you were going to make them do it in the ring. So, they were, they always seemed to work with people. They did, they did do jobs to people, and they, so on and so forth, but they were something else. I thought that
when
was
when I was younger, I seen them take their shoulder pads off one time and then just throw them. Mm-hmm. And then their shoulder pad got actually dug into the pad on the ring and stuck yeah. into it. And I was like, those things aren't made of rubber. They're real.
Oh yeah. No. Those were real. Like the first set they ever had, Animal made himself in his garage. Like, he just bought a bunch of those spikes and drilled holes in a couple old set of football pads I think he had from high school, and they just used those.
Cool.
Yeah. So those things were legit. And one other thing about this match I want to say is that Paul Ellering is one of the most overlooked wrestling managers ever. His work with the Road Warriors was fantastic. Was always good, and I think he is the reason that AOP, the Authors of Pain, got over in NXT the way they did, because without him, they just were not the same team.
I missed that one. I gotta look that guy up again. Who is he?
Paul Ellering, Ellering.
Okay, he was the Road Warriors manager, huh?
Yes, and he was legitimately their manager. Like, he,
cool.
Not only did he do all of their plane tickets and stuff, he actually did all of their financial investments and whatnot. That's why Animal, like doesn't really have to do any work and owns like a owns a small gym and doesn't really do a whole lot is because Ellering was a genius when it came to the stock market and just invested all of their money really well. So he actually their money was making money while they were making money.
Wow, that's good. I'm glad to hear finally a success story
Yeah.
for once.
It's always nice to see that.
Yeah.
It's nice to see people who took care of their money. There's a couple of other ones that did. Well, I mean, Bobby Eaton obviously did. Cornette did. But anyway, so that was that match. I gave it a B plus because it wasn't, I don't think it was a super classic, but it was still really, really good. And then we go to the next match, the main event. Lex Luger versus Ric Flair with J.J. Dillon for the big gold belt. And in this one, there's a nice caveat. If Flair gets disqualified, he loses the title.
Right, so it had to go right down the middle. There was no sneaky business that was going to be going on. No Flair doing any tricks. It was supposed to be right down the middle. And so let's get into this.
Okay, so it starts off, they're talking about how Luger has cut weight, which you can obviously tell that he's smaller than he usually is, but he cut weight to keep up with Flair. Of course, it starts off with a big woo by Ric Flair, because that's the first thing he does is woo. Flair taunts Luger for a little bit. There's a lockup. Luger clotheslines Flair over the top rope, and Luger gets the advantage and does a lot of power moves. And then he starts working the arms in the back, specifically the arm. At one point, Flair does the little begging off in the corner where he's like, no, don't hit me, don't hit me. And that ends up backfiring on him for Luger to take back over. He sends a thumb to the eye and takes over for a little bit, but then Luger hulks up and starts no-selling. Flair sells so well in this match. This is one of the things people, always we talk about. I always talk about Flair. I think he's the greatest of all time, in my opinion. He's the greatest wrestler to ever lace up a pair of boots. Well, the greatest wrestler I've ever seen who's laced up a pair of boots, because I'm sure there are wrestlers from the 30s, 40s that we don't have really videotape or anything of to go back and watch that were just as good as Ric Flair. But as far as I've seen with my own eyes, Ric Flair is my favorite. And he sells so well. He makes you believe that he could lose at any moment to just about anybody. And it's believable. It's not like he's just doing it, selling to sell. He's actually selling in a way that makes sense.
When he picks up his fists after he's done and he's got no more energy left, and he says, "Come on, brother, just keep it going."
But yeah, you're right. We get a nice outside end suplex from Luger that ends up in a two count, but then Luger misses an elbow drop, and Flair starts his comeback. At one point they're on the outside of the ring. Flair comes back in, and Tommy Young like yells at him, and Flair. Flair like gives Tommy Young a little shove, and Tommy Young gives Flair a bigger shove back, and like it starts telling him what's up. Like, I'm the ref, you're gonna listen to me. But by the 15
It
minute,
did the referee break one of the figure four leg locks in the match?
yes, that's a little bit. It's coming up in a little bit.
That was cool. That was cool. The referee breaks up the leg lock. I'd never seen that before. I noticed that.
Oh yeah. So Flair at the 15-minute mark, Flair's in total control. But then Luger starts hawking up again and gets Flair in a sleeper. But Flair ends up escaping the sleeper with a suplex, goes for the figure four, but it gets counted. Luger does a superplex, which goes into a coup count, and that's when he goes into the figure four. And this is what you were talking about. There were a couple of cool things that happened in this sequence. Luger gets the figure four on Flair, which of course Flair's selling like it's just the most painful thing he's ever had happen to him.
Right.
And a couple of times he drops back and lets the referee give him a two count just to like build the anticipation, build the suspense. And then he starts getting towards the rope. And at one point, he gets one hand on the rope, and Tommy Young actually kicks the rope to get Flair's hand off of it, which I thought was, you know, like, you don't see that often. But, you know, if you piss off a referee, they can do something like that.
Yeah.
Tommy Young was kind of known for doing stuff like that. He would kick your arms off a rope if you had pissed him off earlier in the match by not listening to him, burying him. So, but then, yeah, Flair actually gets both hands on the rope, and Tommy Young has to literally go in and break up the hold because it's in so tight. It's essentially what they're trying to say.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I like that.
So then Luger ends up accidentally hitting the ref with an elbow. Tommy Young goes down. And then Luger hits a diving crossbody. This is only a two count because the ref actually comes back. This is another thing that happens in this match that I don't like it when it happens now. If the ref gets hit, goes down, he should only be down for a little bit of time. He shouldn't be down for like 2 or 3 minutes unless you're going to have another referee come out, because is nobody in the back watching the monitors? Is nobody in the truck? Are there no other referees in the building? Why would you have a referee just laying in the ring or laying outside the ring for 2 minutes just doing nothing? It buries everybody. It buries the entire referee staff to do that. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but this is the olden days. Maybe they don't have enough monitors back in the olden days.
No, I mean, they do that now. They didn't do this. Yeah. They didn't do that then because you didn't want, because people would see through it. Like if a referee's just laying there holding his head.
What you're talking about is now, today. If a referee goes down, he should only be down for a second, and then out should come the next referee because obviously they're in the back watching the monitors.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So ref, he hits the ref, hits the diving crossbody, which gets a two count. Flair, we get the Flair corner flop, which is always good. You know you're going to get that somewhere, some point in the Flair match. We get another outside in suplex, and Luger's back in control until JJ causes a distraction, which leads Flair. Flair goes to the outside, pulls Luger's leg out from underneath of him, and hits Luger in the knee with the chair. And then, of course, Flair starts working the leg. And this is about 25 minutes in. So you figure most championship matches today probably top out at about 20 minutes. So this is, you know, this is 5 minutes beyond what a lot of today's championship matches are. And they're still going strong. Hell, Flair hasn't even gotten a full sweat on at this point. You know what I mean? He hasn't sweated through his hair.
Still out there talking to the crowd, still out there doing his shtick.
So Flair gets the figure four on, and the crowd starts their Luger chants. Luger reverses the figure four, and then that's the second time. Actually, I forgot about this because the referee has to unhook their legs the second time when Luger reverses the figure four. Lex starts selling his leg and sells it really well. He sells his leg really well for the majority of the rest of the match. We get the Flair top rope spot where Flair goes up on the top rope and Lex rockets him off. Luger starts no selling again, but his knee is still an issue. And about the 30-minute mark, he goes for the torture rack, but his leg buckles. And Flair, when his leg buckles, Flair gets on top of him and puts his feet up on the second ropes for leverage and pins Luger, and Flair wins. Go ahead. I'm sorry. You go ahead. Say what you got to say.
That was an incredible ending. All the people in the crowd were just shocked. I'm pretty sure everybody was going for Luger at this point to see him win.
Oh yeah. Well, no, everybody. I mean, they were in Virginia, so they're not quite Flair country. It's Southern Virginia though, so it's close to North Carolina. But yeah, Luger was the babyface. Flair had been the heel, and he's been the heel champion since 83, pretty much the entire time. So you figure 5 years with, like, I think Dusty had the belt for like a month. I think Ronnie Garvin might have had it for like 2 months or something. So yeah, it was Flair was pretty much 5 years at this point straight with the belt. So people wanted to see Flair lose. And, you know, I mean, I'm surprised that there wasn't more, you know, well, I mean, you saw the cops there. I was going to say, I'm surprised more people didn't like jump or throw stuff in the ring. But when you have you know, police officers standing around the ring, they that kind of discourages that sort of thing. But
right, Flair looked like he won, and he was like telling the crowd, "Yeah, I won." And then Lex Luger, it just sort of fell flat, and I was I felt bad for Lex Luger. Mm-hmm. But then in the back of my head, I'm still thinking, yeah, good job, Ric Flair.
I mean,
jet flying, wheeling, dealing, son of a gun.
It was a good match. And the match itself, like, even if you just, like you just came in, you know, cold, didn't know anything about any of the storyline, didn't know anything. You came in, watched the match. By the end of the match, you're really cheering for Lex Luger. You really want him to beat Ric Flair. And he doesn't, and it's disappointing that he doesn't. But it's also a great roller coaster ride of a match, because there's so many points in the match where you're like, okay, Lex has really got it rolling. Like, he's really got it. And then Flair does something to cut him off, or he goes to the outside, or, you know, he does something that kills Luger's momentum, and then Luger has to bring his momentum back up again. So it's a good match. And at this point, Luger had only been in for 7 years. I think that's the guy you were talking about.
All right.
Luger had only been professional wrestling for 7 years. So to get a match like this out of a guy that had only been in the business for 7 years is really good. Championship match of this caliber.
The only reason why he missed the torture rack was all those figure four leg locks, and he sold that knee really well.
Oh.
So that's what happens when you wrestle against one of the best, the man. When you have to beat the man, woo!
Oh yeah, the dirtiest player in the game, Ric Flair. I mean, you know, that's just it is what it is. So overall, of course, then we get a really good Flair promo of him basically just gloating for about 3 minutes there at the end of the show, which is fun. I mean, he's Ric Flair. He can gloat as much as he wants. But overall, I gave this this pay-per-view a B+. I don't think it was perfect, but I think it was damn good. That was Starrcade 1988. Any thoughts on the overall of Starrcade 88?
I'm ready to go back to Starrcade 89.
Well, I don't have Starrcade 89 scheduled. The next pay-per-view we will be doing is Starrcade 83. But that will be in 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, because next week we're going to do the two
NXTs, yeah. The one that happened this week and the one that happened last week.
Yeah. So we can catch up on NXT UK and start doing it on, I think if we start doing it on Fridays, that gives me enough time to sit down and take notes on the newest NXT UK and have everything ready. And we'll just start recording at like 7 on Fridays, or, you know.
That sounds perfect. You're the man, Dr. Bob. Thank you so much for letting me do this. Thank you so much for all of your great work that you do. Well, I know you have to work really hard all week long to put this show together. And Warriors, we really love you. We really appreciate you, Dr. Bob. You're the best, man. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I mean, I appreciate that, but thank you too. Like, you bring a lot of energy and you bring a lot of fun to the podcast. And I appreciate the hell out of that, and I appreciate your work and going in. I especially appreciate that you're willing to go back and watch older stuff that you haven't seen to kind of get up to speed on some of the guys that we talk about. Like it, you know. So while we have our little mutual admiration society here,
right now,
but No. So yeah, next week we'll do the two NXT UK episodes, and then the week after that we'll do Starrcade 83, which is a flair for the gold. It's when Ric Flair beats Harley Race in a cage for the NWA Championship, and only his second title reign ever. So it's this
the king.
Yeah, the king, Harley Race.
Okay. All right. This is going to be good. That's going to be in a couple weeks, Warriors. But next week, we're doing NXT UK. So be ready, Warriors.
NXT UK, it'll be this past week. And next week, it's going to be a good episode. Let me see. What else can we plug? Tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, thereabouts, the Legends Wrestling Federation will be going live. With our only our second weekly program, we'll see. That will be on Bob Zevon. That's B0BZEVON on Twitch, and we will be doing that show. We'll see what Dusty Rhodes has to say about Big Show interrupting his match. We'll find out if Gallows and Anderson are going to take Ryder and Hawkins seriously as threats for their tag titles. And Lita and Mickie James might have a match. I think they have a match this week. So it's going to be good. The storylines are starting to come together. I'm really liking it, and I'm having a lot of fun doing commentary. If you didn't watch on Thursday, go back and watch at least the Royal Rumble part of the pay-per-view, because it's hilarious. I had such a good time commentating that Royal Rumble. It's ridiculous. I think I lost Blowout Man for a second. Are you back, Blowout Man?
Dr. Bob, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I was just going over my my Legends Wrestling Federation stuff on my Twitch account. I was just letting the people know about that. You can follow Blowout Man at Ohana Wrestling Federation.
Right, we're at Ohana Wrestling Federation, and we also do the Blow Off on Putting You Over.
Putting You Over, and it's on Putting You Over's YouTube channel. It's
correct.
The,
so just send me a text, a tweet, and I'll give you guys a shout out on the show. It'll be amazing.
It is absolutely by far the best recap under 2 minutes on YouTube.
Thank you, Dr. Bob.
It is. It's fantastic. You do everything so well, and it's so concise and short. And it's like, if you miss an episode, like literally just watch the Blowout and you're going to get caught up. And even if you don't get caught up, you'll at least be entertained. So, you know, maybe you'll get both. Who knows? You can find the podcast on Twitter at Back to the Ring. And you can find me on Twitter at Bob Zevon. Like I said, the LWF is live on Saturdays at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. And occasionally on Thursdays at around 9. But that's only for special stuff. I think that's really about it. Watch Bammer Slammer, and Smacked Raw podcast, and Putting You Over on Twitch / Putting You Over, right? twitch.tv/PuttingYouOver. And you can find them on Twitter at at Standing Streamer, at Putting You Over, at Bammer Slammer. So, and yep. At Smacked Raw Podcast. So, and Smacking It Raw Podcast, the number one wrestling podcast on Pornhub.
No way.
Yes, it is. It is the number one wrestling podcast on Pornhub. Smacking It Raw.
Also, Warriors, just to let everybody know, tomorrow in Washington, Hammerstone is going to be wrestling against the outlandish megastar Ziggy Dice.
There you go.
And I just wanted to give the outlandish megastar Ziggy Dice a huge shout out, and Hammerstone also a big shout out. They're big, big, big fan. I'm big fans of both of them. This is going to be a big fight, Phil.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. And One more thing, and then we're going to go. I do want to say, if anyone out there listening has any connections and want to get never mind. I'm going to cut that part out.
We'll tease that one, and we'll leave that one for next time.
Yeah, I had something I wanted to plug, but I don't have everything together to plug it yet. So, all right, everyone. It's been fun for the Blowout Man, for myself, Dr. B.O.B., and the immortal words of Tully Blanchard. It's been your pleasure. Good night.